I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Ross Carl here with Bryn Hall. He's back.
He's back.
But we don't want stories, Bryn, of Mad Monday. But, you know, give us an insight. What did the boys get up to?
No, look, it was...
No such thing as Mad Monday anymore.
No, there isn't. There was a few Sprites and a few lemonades. Actually at our household as well. So, look, we came back from Tauranga. We actually went to Bryn Gatlin's mansion in Waihi.
Is it Bryn's or Warren's?
Well, yeah. So Warren and Trudy, they bought, let us be in Waihi for a couple of hours. So... had a few beverages on the on his estate.
Hell of a
pretty
spot.
Much. It's a hell of a spot.
Malula bar there, just right at the...
Oh, look, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Look, they did a bit of reconstruction. I went there last year and they were doing a bit of reconstruction, but now it looks pretty good. So, but now we connect together as a group. You know, we're bloody disappointed against it in the Tauranga game. But look, we enjoyed each other's company and pretty stoked to see a couple of our Harbour boys named in that Moana Pacific team, which was well-deserved.
Yeah, let's get into that team. That's a cracking team. To take on New Zealand Māori, what is December 5?
Yeah, next week.
There's a few boys that could be playing for the Māori too there.
Yeah, Brown,
I saw
Josh Shuani in there. Yeah, I did see that. Who's
Leonard Brown?
Yeah, who's played for the Māori. So, yeah, Tanner's probably taken a couple from us, mate.
He's built a little.
Very impressive team. Very impressive team. So, it's going to be a great occasion coming next week in Hamilton.
Yeah, there's some weapons in that back line.
That back three.
Who would you name? Who would you have
here? You got Ray Arce. He picks himself. Mathalai is in great form. And then I think at fullback, you have to go with, you know, Stevie P, who's, you know, has that dual sort of role, can take the load off, I suppose, Josh Iwani, and then you've got Nanai Satoru to come on. Jeez. His impact player who pretty much, he spends his spare time dodging raindrops because he beats that many defenders.
Yep.
Yeah, cracking team. Vince Arso in the midfield, like, that's
Billy Pye as well. Like, you'd know a bit about him, but he's certainly come on, I reckon, in the 13 position this Mitre 10 Cup. Mm.
Yeah, he has, and I think again, it's gonna be a great occasion. But I think for me, the biggest thing seeing that is, I see Tikitu Tuma in there as well. Obviously, Tixie, good to see the Fijian boys in there with Johnny as well, who's been playing well, and another Harvard man, which is always great to see. But no, look, it's going to be, I'd probably say they'd be favourites, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
They've got a pretty strong team.
Do you know the Māori team?
I don't know the Māori team, but as a Māori supporter.
Fan.
It's going to be a good game.
You'll have your fan jersey on that day, won't
you? Oh, absolutely, I will. Yeah.
Playing underdogs.
What's that?
Are you playing underdogs already?
Mate, as a supporter, you look at that side, you just think they're very impressive. Mm. So,
well done.
Yeah, it's going to be
well done.
And as a player?
if you select me, mate. Look, it's going to be a good one. So, no, they're going to have to be on the job, especially in Hamilton.
Nice, we'll have to go inside the camp that week.
Who knows?
I nearly got it.
Close.
Actually, you know, this looks like a game to me that should become a yearly thing. It's got, you know, it's got success written all over it. A State of Origin style, maybe not a three game, but once a year we have this game because that game is so appealing. It's a cracker.
Well, if you think about, obviously the Māoris and they have a lot of opportunities that we've had to play test matches, but the Moana Pacific gives so much to New Zealand rugby, not just at that level, but then at Super Rugby, Mitre 10 Cup, and even at international level, the Pacific Islanders have given so much to New Zealand rugby, so to make it a regular fixture where they can be rewarded in New Zealand and playing in New Zealand, I think it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Even behind the scenes, if you look at the support staff, the people like Tana Umanga, Julie Clausen, people who have got that Pacific background who've done a lot for New Zealand rugby over the years, are involved in this team. It's got meaning right through it.
Yeah,
I think it's also certain players that could play for either side have chosen to represent Moana Pacifica. So that intrigues me as well, and maybe potentially somewhere an angle you could go for Ross during the week and ask them as to why they did go down that path and what the reasons are for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the great things about heritage in New Zealand, I'm not sure necessarily people get it in the Northern Hemisphere, is how you can be multiple things, you know, and proud of all of those things at the same time. Yeah. And this game, with a lot of players in that game, represents that.
Yeah. Well, I think as well, like, because there hasn't been many opportunities for them in Pacific, I think the last time a Pacific Island team was selected was against the All Blacks, you know, back when Sione Lawaki and back in those days. So, you know, 10, 15 years ago when they were given opportunity. So, you know, for the likes of Josh, who I'd, you know, would have loved to see in the Maldives jersey, you know, he's obviously of Samoan heritage as well. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for him to be able to represent his family. And again, you know, coming forward, if this is a regular fixture, people that are New Zealand Māori and Pacific Islanders can have the opportunity to choose both sides.
I think also, and this is probably coming from a point of view for myself more so, but we played the Māori from a New Zealand Barbars point of view a few years ago, and like that meant a lot to us to represent the New Zealand Barbars. We hear a lot about the World Barbars, but you could add a third team into the mix and have New Zealand Barbars and have a little mini tri-nations, which I think we've got enough talent to create a third team that would really, you know, have something worthwhile watching going into next year and beyond.
And it's a nice stepping stone, isn't it? You know, you can get a slightly higher level than Mitre 10 Cup, you know, a bit of action at the end of the Cup every year for some players who really would benefit from that, you know, looking ahead to the following seasons, get more of a test match atmosphere.
Absolutely.
Guys like Makaeli Tu'u, who was sensational for the Highlanders this year, but, you know, there's Hoskins Atutu and there's all these guys in front of him. This kind of play could help a guy like that.
Oh, absolutely. And it gets you used to having to prepare together fast. You've got a week or two's prep. You don't have, you know, 3 or 4 months like you do for Super Rugby to get your performance right.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of weeks to get together, gel, learn each other and have that sort of atmosphere. And I was speaking to Tana yesterday and they get together for a week and he said he wants to make it more about, you know, that Barbar's style feel and fixture and you know, get the boys together, have a lot of fun and enjoyment, but at the end of the day, the result's still a priority.
Yeah, I think like that as well. You talk about guys that were in form and super, and because we've just got such good, you know, stocks in this country, you know, that one test match, that it's pretty much a test match if you think about it, you know, it's an opportunity for the All Blacks selectors to see that kind of level. You know, actually, he played really well and is up to that level. So again, this is a great opportunity for a lot of men that'll probably be wanting to stamp their mark, you know, come into higher honours.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a halfback that's won 4 titles, and if he can really stamp up the Maldives team, you know, Ian Foster can take note.
Yeah. Well, let's hope he gets selected.
Let's hope.
Some good nines floating around.
Actually, you just brought back some memories of that game. Was it 2005, that Pacific game? I was a junior producer at Radio Sport at that point, and we had 20 tickets to give away. And, you know, there were about 4 tickets just floating around that looked like they had my name on it. And so I kind of called the boys and I was like, hey, you lads want to go to this game on the weekend? I think Saturday night's show might not have its giveaways anymore. And we turn up. The lads, Dale Budge was one of them. Lads turn up at this game and we sit in the best seats in the house. We're on 50 metres, we're in the second tier. You know,
living the dream in
Albany. You know, there were people there. It was amazing. It was absolutely stunning.
Are you a Harbour fan now?
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
But like most Harbour fans, I haven't turned up yet.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, sorry, I'm next year, guys, get the team along. Or go to Onewa Domain.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, we see great. Finish your story.
So we're sitting there, we sit down in these seats, and you know who came down and sat next to me? My boss.
Oh.
Who had done exactly the same thing, comes down and takes a seat next to me. Malcolm Jordan sits there, and I turn around to him, and just like, oh, I don't feel so bad now.
It's gone.
It was a Radio Sport, never got to what was a sensational game.
It was.
Hope you get a bit more of that. We've got other games of footy on. We've got the All Blacks playing this weekend. I suppose one of the key things for the All Blacks playing this weekend is what do you get out of it? You know, obviously you want to win. Obviously you want to keep your Tri-Nations dreams alive. But when you're 2 from 5 and things haven't been going to plan, I feel like there's got to be almost a greater view on this and in trying to create something that can have them knowing they're on the right track for next season.
Yeah, well, I think what they want to get out of it most is you know, I suppose a bonus point so that they can really try and win the Tri-Nations. They've copped a lot of heat based on those, ratio of wins and draws and losses. But if they can get out of it with a win of the Tri-Nations, retaining the Bledisloe, in what is perceived to be a poorer year by All Black standards, I think that'll be a great sign of character and culture and I suppose a growth of their unit and where they want to go to Because let's not forget, after that big drumming of the Wallabies, they said, you know, we feel like we're creating something special. Sam Kane said it, Ian Foster said it, and we're building something special here. And I harped on about that week. And I still, you know, I know there's two losses, but if they can fight their way out of it, that'll be the sign of their true character as a team, and something that they'll be able to draw on when it comes to even more pressure moments like World Cups, like, you know, I suppose, whatever it is. You know, we don't know what the international season looks like next year, but against, you know, the greater nations up in the Northern Hemisphere, they'll be able to draw on these experience so early in their four-year cycle. I think it's still a powerful place for us to build off, and not the end of the world. Like, again, I'll state, I don't want them to lose, but it's a great experience for a lot of young men, a lot of new guys into the group, to really test their character as individuals, but more importantly, test their culture and character under pressure as a squad.
I think if you get any chances to win silver, and we're pretty fortunate that, you know, the draw happened on the weekend, which is great for New Zealand and for the All Blacks to have an opportunity to still win the Tri Nations. But I think for me, what I'm looking forward to is, you know, can Argentina do three good test matches in a row? You know, so they played really well against the All Blacks, probably slipped off a little bit around, but again, it was a defensive effort game, you know, a lot of defence, you know, there'll be a lot of stats that comes out through this podcast around that. But, you know, to be a good test match team, you've got to back it up week to week to week. And Argentina have an opportunity against the All Blacks, who are going to be hurting, and they'll be wanting to take the learnings that they had against Argentina previously, again, fresh after a bye week, reviewing and previewing and building and boiling. You know, we've talked about a little bit in this podcast, they'll be boiling a little bit, and, you know, no doubt Gilbert Anoki will be having a lot to say this week with a lot of off-the-ball actions that happened in the previous test, and even you saw it on the weekend, both sides were getting into the argy-bargy. So, look, it's going to be a great opportunity, and I'm looking forward to see if Argentina can come to the party and for that last test match, you know, that's three in a row that they can have and hopefully perform really well going forward.
You often hear questions about this. I'm sure you guys have fielded them about the balance between argy-bargy and getting it right. It's a bit of a lazy question, but in this particular scenario, I wonder whether the All Blacks will even be considering that. They've got to hit rucks. They've got to do those things right. But, you know, do you just ignore it? Do you ignore the nonsense off the ball, the jersey pulling, the players being taken out, and just get on? Like, forget about this niggle. Is that the best way to deal with niggle? Just freaking forget about it.
Yeah, I think if it's going to detract from your game and your role in the system, and I think, you know, you heard Paddy come out yesterday and say that's what, you know, he's going to try and do as an individual, is walk away from it and just focus on his next task. And I'd say that's a general message across the board, because there's times where it can work for you. Like we've seen instances, I suppose, at the Eden Park test, you know, Dane Cole's giving a little bit of a rub on the head to a few people, and it worked for him. It fueled him to perform better. But if it fuels you in a way that it detracts from your game and what you need to do for the team, then you've got to step back and know what works for you as an individual. So it is a balance. You know, they won't be pushovers. I don't think you want to get to the point that you're a pushover. But the biggest thing is they've got to play a game plan and a style that makes it takes that out of the game. So, you know, early I think we should see a little bit of kicking and give the ball back. You know, Argentina, again, based their game on D. They had, you know, 34% territory, 40% possession, and they just tackled their hearts out all night. And they tackled at 94%. So they love defending. So why not give the ball back to them and make them do something they don't want to do, and let us bring the physical intent defensively and really build them down and play it like an 80-minute chess match and work and work, and then eventually we'll be able to play our natural style. But it's going to take a little bit of time. And what I think, if we do that early, it'll take the strength away from RG. They won't get so much crash and bash and feed off their defence. And then there's not so much stigma and so much, I suppose, hype and energy that they can feed off. And then they're going to have to find energy to feed off elsewhere. And if then they get caught up in the niggle and we're all go for playing, then hopefully we can score some tries and we can get this bonus point that we want.
So my biggest thing around the niggle, and like, there's been a lot of messaging, because like, it's pretty similar to like down at the Crusaders. Like, whenever you play the Chiefs or anything where they're a bit niggly, you know, you're probably told to walk away from it, and, you know, just concentrate on your own role. You know it's coming, so prepare for it as best as you can. But I guess the things that I've like been thinking about around is like, you know, if you can actually just, because you don't want to be a pushover, you know what I mean? So you know it's going to come, and if they're going to push it, then they might think, oh, you know, we've actually got them in the head, they're walking away, they're not locking eyes with us. But if you actually just engage them and just saying that you're there, you know, you're not doing anything harmless to put your team in a bad position of giving away penalties, but just to know that you're there. And if you're there, and then I guess the thing that you want to base it around is, you know, if you can do that, but then you're not giving away penalties and it doesn't detract from what Chip is saying around your role, then you know, then it's fine. I don't see there's a problem with it. It's if you start giving penalties away, that's when you're hurting your team. then trying to do off
because they'll take the three. They'll kick the three, and then you heard Ledesma talk about scoreboard pressure. They're all about scoreboard pressure, and he felt that 7 minutes where Aussie's discipline, I think it was an incorrect clean on Dungunu when potentially probably could have kicked. Phillip's accidental offside, which sort of a schoolboy error, and then a scrum penalty. That scrum penalty was, he believed, changed the momentum. It took them to 15-9, and then there was another two quick penalties, and it goes to 15-all.
Yeah.
And it's like Aussie had this whole game controlled
the
whole time, and then that scoreboard pressure of 15-15, and then you start over trying, and Hodge had a chance to win it, but it shouldn't have come down to that.
Yeah.
They had so many opportunities, and they had the game plan so well in that first 40. So Paisami's little grubber in behind, the Argentinian nine again was in the line. So Pattaya nearly scored. Their attacking kicks, you just mentioned there, 13 contestables or attacking kicks out of their total of 25. So all of it was structured around, putting that pressure and slowing their line speed defence. But then in the second half, Dave Rennie said it in the aftermatch, it's like we got bored of kicking, so we stopped.
Mm.
So that's the thing, is it's a chess match for 80 minutes, and for the ABs, discipline's going to count, but discipline also to stick to your guns for the whole 80 to manipulate and work that Argentinian defence to score points, because we still need to score points. Yes, we want to win, but I think, to really secure it, you want to get some tries early.
I thought they got the balance right in that first half. Yes, they kicked a lot and often are quiet, and they're good attacking kicks, but even their phase play shape, like they had really quick ball, they won the physicality battle. Nick White was getting out. He made a snipe early on in the game, but they had options off him. Then they had options off 10 with their phase play structure and attack, and they were actually just penetrating and getting over the advantage line. Do you think the weather dictated it a little bit in the second half, with it raining a little bit in the second half?
Well, I don't know, because they didn't kick as much, so I don't think it dictated anything.
I think the skill execution dropped a little bit in that second half. It was just, there's a lot of drop balls.
Yeah, but wouldn't you adjust to more of a kicking game? You could see Rennie was frustrated that they went away from kicking and it worked so well for them and put, as I said before, give the ball back to the Argies and make them do something. And if they kick it back again and then hopefully get some territory advantage.
Mm.
I agree that their attack was extremely strong. They had 63% gain line success. Their carries were strong. They were right over the advantage line compared to Argentina, who had 25%, and that's because, Aussies, it's not as sapping when you've got the ball. Because they had so much ball, they could actually man up on defence and actually put bodies back against RG. So it's a test match they know they should have won.
Yep.
But because they couldn't execute that last pass and score some tries in that first 40, I think that pressure mounted once, I suppose, they caught up to 15-all.
Yep. That kicking game, and we saw it with the All Blacks as well, when their kicking game's been inconsistent, it's caused major problems.
Mm.
So, if you watch the NRL, you'll see Alfie Langer at the Broncos hovering in behind the attacking line, delivering messages and things like that. If your captain and your playmakers aren't delivering those messages, how do those messages get out?
Games from your wingers and fullback.
Yeah.
That never comes from those guys. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be the communication outside those guys, or a tactic of your long ruck box kick sort of thing. So there's guys in the team for that role to pick that space. And sometimes there's fluky ones, not fluky ones, but off the cuff ones, those cross field attacking kicks if there's space, a little chip in behind. But mainly it'll come from the outside back through.
Yeah, and then if they're not seeing it, then you've also got the coaches up in the box that send out those messages to the trainers and that kind of stuff as well. So, but if you look at the difference in the kicking as well, in that the majority of the game, Australia had most of the ball and they played a lot. Like, their carries, they were 150. They had 157 passes and 133 carries, while Argentina had 81 and 57 carries. So, and they had a lot more of the ball. But the kicks as well, a lot. What I thought Argentina did really well is their exit kicks, because they were in their half a lot, they had to kick long and out, and so Sanchez and their nine as well kicked really long and out and actually didn't give them opportunities to attack too much. And then I looked at probably crucial moments as well, the two line out, the three line outs inside the Argentina's half that they just didn't get.
They're happy to go to line outs, Argy. They're actually quite effective. They're the most effective in the Tri-Nation of stealing line outs and disrupting, and so that's why they're happy to kick out. But their discipline to their game plan is exactly the same. They'll just kick it back to you. Like you said, the exit kicks are just out.
Yeah.
They'll just kick it out and they'll go, we want to defend. So the key for the All Blacks this week is how can they take that away from them? Is it a quick throw an option if they don't get it? Is it really just keep kicking the ball back to them and let us hit some bodies and make them play? I'm sure they've got the plan, but we can't just go in there expecting to play a certain style. And also, we can't just expect that kicking is going to win it as well. Like, they have to be accurate kicks. They have to be kicks to the pitches that we see. And I think the biggest thing that probably frustrates, would frustrate me as a coach and probably Wallabies coaching staff is Hodge was the top carrier. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of those carries came in the second half, so he's looking up in that rush defence, so he's got no one, so he's having to tuck and go. Mm. And then, that's where their kicking game sort of lost structure. And I think if your 10's not, like, we praised him the week before, well, I praised him the week before, that he allowed others, like that young midfield, to really flourish and other guys do really well. Mm. Whereas this week, that defensive pressure forced him back in to carry a lot. And that once you lose your 10 into a ruck, you can lose your shape quite quickly. And that's what I mean. Like, because he carried so much in that second 40, I think that's why their kicking game went awry, because he wasn't there being the general.
Well, it's hard as well. I think, you think about Matt Tamura, if Hodge's ability to do that and take it to line, and you've got a second pivot, he's actually really experienced understanding, okay, our 10's in that ruck, you can still marshal and be able to get the ball where it needs to go, whether it goes to the edge so you can get back into your shape, or you've got communication to your outside. So.
And it's hard, like, I know Nick White's there with experience, but it's quite hard.
Yeah,
quite hard from his position to see it. So you've got young Banks there, and you've got Paisami and Patera, who are, I suppose, more running threats. But in saying that, I thought Hunter Paisami was great attacking kicks-wise. But that's what I'm saying. You lose Hodge, and you look at the backs that are left out there to take control and help Nick White out, that's where their balance of attack just sort of, and that was a key stat. If Hodge is your main ball carrier, that's to me means that you're not quite getting your attack plan flowing.
So as a halfback, is that where you say, come on, play off me, let's play more off nine, let's get a little bit more direct, and then we can open up Hodge later on?
It depends. Like, if you think in the first half, like the physicality and the breakdown, White was able, he was able to get out, so once you don't get that quick ball, and if your 10's out, then you can't really see that as a 9. You can, obviously, you'd be frustrated because you're not getting what you want. So the 12 and the 13, even the fullback, if he's roving in and around there, it's his job to be able to give the kicks for the information. So if they're going nowhere and you've got a fullback there or even a winger, he's got to be able to say, okay, there's nothing on, let's go to a box kick. Because they do that. Nick White's got a great box kick game. So the game management, when your 10's not there, you need your 12, especially your 12, and then probably your fullback to be able to own that. And if you're on the edge, then your wingers need to be able to see where the space is in behind, whether it be a box kick or if you kick long. So, if they've got two guys on the edges looking for the box kicks, you want to kick down the middle of the field. So then it's rolling, and then you can reset your line and they'll kick out and you can have another set piece. So the understanding of a 12, your fullback, and then your wingers be able to see where the space is as well, it's crucial, especially if your 10 can't do that.
So would the All Blacks have learned as much of what Australia did against Argentina as what they did themselves? Like, it seems like there's some lessons there.
Oh, I think that it's very similar. I don't think Argy are going to change their way of playing. They want to defend, and they feed off that. That's where they get their energy. And they'll take their three and they'll back themselves to get a result based on kicking penalties. And, the one try that they have had is often an advantage. So that's when they have that advantage, that's when they might chance their arm. But it's. I don't think it's going to change this week. Yeah. It's just what they've come up with in terms of their structures and strategies to change it. Because I ran into Graham Henry yesterday, and you've got to.
Sure, there's some name dropping going on.
I went to the Blues yesterday the first time, and Tana was there, and obviously Auckland trained there as well. So Ted was there, and I was speaking to him about it, and he was saying you've got to manipulate the defence to get what you want on attack, and it's I just don't want to take his point and then not give him credit. It's such a popular podcast, he's probably listening and getting some points. But it was just interesting to hear the way he was thinking as well. You just got to be able to manipulate the D to be able to get your attack going. You can't just be stubborn in one way of playing because their D's not going to change. So it's what we can do to adjust it and make them you know, because they're really confident defensively. But all it takes is to make one or two guys in their role hesitant. Is he going to kick? Is he going to run? And then they've got line speed here and this guy doesn't fly up. Well, there's the hole.
Yeah.
And so then it comes your option taking. You don't just get stuck in one way, oh, I'm just going to attack and kick because that's what everyone's spoken about. Now the now it's on to play sort of thing. So that option taking and management of that's key.
And I think so, like like what Jipper said, like Pablo, he said, you know, they're confident in their defense system. So, you know, they want to, if they want to play without the ball, they're confident enough. And you can see by the stats, you know, 98% of their forwards made their tackles on the weekend. You know, you don't see those stats ever. You know, you talk about 94% tackle success rate, Jip, it's good enough to be, if you think, if you're rocking at 90%, it's, you know, that's world class. So, but I think the biggest thing with a good line speed team and a team that's well connected is yes, you can obviously try and do that with attacking kicking games, but the animation around your lines, around off face play shape, to get that kind of hesitancy around is he my front door, is he my back door, am I kicking him behind? Is the guy on the edge? Is he on the wing taking away the kick space? All those guys have to be together and on the same page, because if you're not, then it's so much easier for guys just to tee off if they've just got a flat three or flat four on attack with as backs. It's so much easier to defend. But if you can get a guy in the front, out the back, and then a rover inside floating around there, you know how hard it is defensively to...
Especially that last forward, first back
and
seam, if you can manipulate
and the Australians did that really quite well when they got quick ball playing off Hodge. You know, they had a short ball, out the back option, and then a guy coming on the outside. So that animation and manipulation around that to get those the midfielders and especially loose forwards or tight forwards to get them thinking, I think that's the best way that you can try and penetrate in a defensive attack, especially if they've got a great tackle percentage like the Argentinians do.
That's tactically, and that's some great knowledge being dropped here. Some outstanding knowledge being dropped here. What about mentally? You mentioned Gilbert Anoka's name, All Blacks mental skills coach / manager. We've seen some stuff over the last week or so. We saw Sam Kane talking about, and he was probably misquoted at times, talking about how, you know, some of the fans are great and some of the fans don't know what the hell they're talking about. We've seen TJ, and I think the quote was on Instagram, if you ain't with us now, don't come later. Look, I wonder whether siege mentality is always a healthy thing. The note I wrote here was, you know, are you with us or are you against us a touch myopic? And is it an indication of that being a healthy mindset within a team, or is that an unhealthy mindset?
Oh, I don't think you can take that as a team mindset, because I'll just use what Fozzie came out and said on News Talk ZB, and I think he said it's just part of the process. We love our fans. We understand that there's going to be negative feedback. He appreciates the negative feedback. He wants us to be passionate as fans. He wants us to be talking about the game. And he said it's just on us to have a better understanding that it's part of the process. And I think as the leader of the All Blacks, he just knocked it on the head for me.
Yeah.
I just think we move forward through it. There's individuals and how they motivate themselves to get the performance. Yeah. And at the end of the day, whatever happens and whatever's said, you're going to be judged by your performance. You know, we've both been in teams that have gone through really challenging times, and at the end of the day, if you get some results, the pressure will ease. And I thought what Fozzie did coming out and stamping it, I thought he nailed it by saying, we want the feedback, we appreciate the passion and the love that you have for the jersey and the game, keep it coming, we embrace it and we'll learn from it.
And I think that's where rugby's going. Like, you know, you think about athletes be able to talk about how they feel and everything like that. So, you know, that's been said, you know, with TJ's personality, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, it's his personality around there. And he's not the only All Black and the guy that has, you know, has his own stamp of what he believes in. So, you know, obviously I think the messaging wouldn't be as a team. It won't be like that. But individuals, again, like, you know, and I think that's where the rugby's got to. You've got your own opinion. You're allowed to have that. And so you should.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Also, players are still all learning. Like, social media wasn't around ages ago. So everyone's still learning and understanding. And I think Artie touched on it is the importance of mental side of the game and dealing with these pressures and having conversations to learn how to deal with it and be better from it. So they're definitely aware of it. They're taking their stance as individuals, but as a team, I don't think I don't think their team mindset. For me, your mindset will filter from the top down, and as I said again, I think Fozzie nailed it in the way he spoke on News Talk ZB on the weekend.
So what do you do with trolls then? Is it a case of you use social media as an outlet but not an inlet? Is that basically the way that you have to deal with it? Because it's such an important way of reaching your fans, but at the same time, it's a place where you can get a lot of negativity.
I think it's just, it's part and parcel of us as rugby players. It's just, you know, if we're winning and that kind of stuff, then, you know, you're going to be given the positive praise. And as fans, you know, they're allowed to do that. You know, they support, they give hard-earned money, you know, they talk and they're always supporting the All Blacks or whatever team you're supporting. So it just comes part and parcel, you know. You think about it, when was the last time the All Blacks probably had this percentage loss? And, you know, I think I saw a stat, you know, it's been decades or since we've last had this kind of slow start. So I just think it comes part and parcel with being a professional rugby player in this day and age. And again, it's having the support systems of, you know, your family, your friends, and then Gilbert and being able to touch into Gilbert and Oka and the mental skill side to be able to deal with that. So, but I think it just comes, I seriously just think it comes with the part and parcel of being a professional rugby player, and it's going to come. You just got to be able to prepare for it. Probably turn off the social media as well. It's probably a solution you could do, but Jip, I don't know about you, but I think that's, you know, it's the day and age of where rugby and, I guess, athletes are going, what they have to deal with on an everyday basis.
Oh, look, yeah, it's definitely a way we're going, but I think we can all get better at it from an athlete point of view and from a fan's point of view. I think if we're all genuine about this mental health situation, then we just all need to get together. And there's certainly a place for negative feedback. It's just the way, I suppose, it's structured. And there's certainly a place for, from players' point of view, of putting stuff out there, but also letting stuff in, because that's, you know, you want to have that connection with your fans. That's how you grow your game and you grow, I suppose, the relationship and for fans with the club, the jersey, but with you as an individual. So I think we'll get better with it over time. But there's definitely growth from all areas. We otherwise, there's no point having these discussions about mental health, because then it's just lip service if we're prepared to just sit here and take it. Because, as I harp on, there's room for negative feedback. It's I suppose it's a tone, and as long as it's not personal and it's about errors you made as a rugby player, and from a place of knowledge, then you can't argue with it. But I think the whole social media thing can be done a lot better by everyone.
I think that there's a responsibility here, both on the players and the media, to better educate the fans. When you look at what Sam Kane said about these people who are coming at them, don't know what they're talking about. Well, if they don't know what they're talking about, they need to find out what they're being told. So that comes down to both the players and the fans. I've been frustrated about this for a long time, because as a journalist, so many questions I ask, I can't get answers to, whether it be about game plans or structures. You know, there's IP there that you're not going to give away. But if the fans don't understand that IP, then they can never say things constructive, because they don't understand what's going on.
Well, I can speak from experience on this. I started a radio segment 6 or 7 years ago on Radio Sport, now News Talk ZB, with Darcy Watergrave.
Yeah.
And the whole motivation for it was, I made a decision. The Blues were going through a tough time. I was a young player. I was interested in, I love rugby. Everyone knows I love rugby. I was interested in media as a potential life after rugby. And so I spoke with James Rigby at the time and got in contact with Darcy. And my main motivation was, I either complain that they don't know, or I've become part of the solution. And that's what I did. And I've done that, and we've had callers, and I've tried to educate as best I can. I've also taken on the chin. I've never missed a session, even when a bad game. And I'll tell you, it wasn't easy at times. It was brutal at times. But I manned up, and more importantly, I've stuck to my guns. And this is how things like this create. It's about educating and give that understanding. And I think with the development of technology, so now that was on radio, but now podcasts are so accessible that this is another element that can, you know, can bring our fans into the game, but also educate, so that when they're watching it, see a little bit differently. You've got Tambai Matson, who's doing it for test match footy in the war room with Goldie, and that's created further education. So I think there is a better opening of that. And yes, I agree that you can't give away too many secrets, but you can give general understanding. Like, I've had some great callers of late just trying to explain the contestable kick and why we just give the ball back, and letting them understand it's about, you know, saving energy and putting skill sets under pressure, but also not playing too much rugby between the 240s. And they leave going, oh, okay, I can see that now.
Yeah.
So I think there is a change in the guard in that. But I agree that it was frustrating from a journalist's point of view, but it was also frustrating from a player's point of view, due to, you're getting a lot of criticism, and you know, there wasn't that understanding. Mm. So hence the reason that I said I wanted to be part of the solution rather than just sitting back and complaining. And it's something I've really enjoyed connecting with the fans. And I think I get better feedback for my radio and podcast work than I do as a player.
Just wait till Dave Rennie brings you onto his coaching team.
Yeah, oh, I don't think that'll happen.
But it is important, isn't it, Bryn? That, yeah. You know, there is, because also I think one of the key parts to it is that once the information has been shared, then the fans feel part of it. Yeah. And that's all they really long for.
Well, then, coming back to Chipper's point around, you know, education, I think, is probably the biggest thing around understanding for our fans. You know, I think there's a lot of things you talk about, like keyboard warriors and that kind of stuff, but if they can actually understand around certain things around the game, behind the scenes, you know, the tactics and the education and understanding of, like, what's actually, what the plan is and what the All Blacks are doing, then they get a better understanding, you know, and it's not just their general knowledge of what they think. So yeah. I think education going forward, we talk around social media and getting more education around social media. But then I think as our game growing and be able to have more platforms like podcasts, you talk around different podcasts in the world and talk around the breakdown, having to see what the shapes are and how the All Blacks are playing and being able to educate our viewers, I think it's only going to help support players when they're actually in the media and talking around what they're seeing, and it's not going to be so negative because they've actually got a substance to their arguments around what they're saying. And I think as players, that's where we feel like if someone can actually give us criticism around what it actually looks like and what it is,
yeah,
then it's easier to be able to get through. It's the negative ones where it's got nothing to do with rugby and it's personal.
It's just, yeah.
When it's personal, that's when it's different. And that's, I think, us as players, we get frustrated. But if it's criticism where it's well due and they've actually
and
got
you knocked the ball on and that you're average for knocking the ball on, we agree with you.
Yeah.
Because
that's
how we feel. Like, rugby players are really good at receiving feedback because our whole life is week to week and we get feedback every day. So we finish Monday and we'll get feedback clips that night.
Yeah.
Tuesday, that night, Wednesday. So it's not about the feedback.
Yeah.
It's just when personal. It turns personal that it's not necessarily, like, we understand that the fans are going to get frustrated if we don't perform.
Mm.
But just make it about rugby.
Let's head north.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Nations Cup is an interesting competition. One of the most interesting things out of the weekend was Mauro Atoje. Not surprising, but interesting. Mauro Atoje, 25 from 25 tackles. Like, that's a big stat. And he ruined their lineout. What a player.
Yeah. Oh, you go, Brent.
Oh, look, mate, I think we talked about him previously in the World Cup. You know, you talk around a guy that probably single-handedly, you know, won them that semi-final. I know, obviously, there were a lot of players that played well in that, but a guy like that who's just imposed.
Jeez, Underhill and Curry will not like hearing that.
He just keeps getting better and better. If you're looking for a guy that's going to be a leader of the Lions, you know, he'd be probably a guy that up there, Jip, that you'd probably be thinking, you wouldn't go past him being one of the captains.
I think you've got to know him as a person and how he is around the team. As a player, you know, some guys that are leadership styles as a player is actions, then he'd be perfect fit. But as we know, there's more to it. So I don't know him as a person, so I can't comment too much on that. But I think when you pick a Lions squad, you're going to have a number of guys that have that ability. But he's certainly doing extremely well. And we spoke about the top five defenders of the Six Nations, and he was dominant tackler. And there were three out of the five that were England, and I think they're basing a lot of their success, similar to Argentina, is defence wins championships, and their defence is pretty formidable. I just want to put a bit of context to it. I'm not being negative to the 25 tackles. I think he's exceptional. He did put line-out pressure on. Johnny May scored an exceptional individual try off the back of that line-out pressure. Those are great. He got the two turnovers, but I actually just want to give a reward to the other seven men on the park. So 208 tackles England had. They had 32% of the ball, so they're on defence a hell of a lot. So that just, as I just want to give back, we talk about educating. Kremer, it was about 50-50 and he made 28 tackles. And I was saying that balance of possession was key there, because 28 tackles when it's 50-50 is pretty impressive. When it's 70-30, 25 tackles isn't as impressive. It's impressive, but I just want to put in context. So you got Itoje at 25. You got Vunipola, 25. You got Underhill, 16. Curry, 19. Launchbury, 16. Sinclair, 16. George, 18. And Vunipola, 15.
That's Marco on 15?
And Billy, at 25. So he's equal to Itoje. And it's just to put in context that when you don't have the ball, there's a lot of men working really hard in that engine room, taking a lot of those tackles. So it was an exceptional performance from Itoje. He has been doing it for a number of years. I think he's a great player. But numbers 1-8 for England are winning them titles on the back of set piece work
defense. And
defence. And they have the skill set when they want to pull trigger, but they are run and led so well by Owen Farrell, and his discipline of their game plan and his game management is off the back of their hard work, but he doesn't waste their hard work.
Yeah.
He's been exceptional in making sure they get rewarded for their hard work via his boot. We talk about Sanchez, well, Farrell kicks them from anywhere, and also by his attacking kicks. Johnny May's first try was from a crossfield kick. Yes, he did some exceptional work in the air, but it was a pinpoint kick. From that turnover of the line-out, it was Farrell who spread it to the width to have one crack. And by balance of attack, I just wanted to point out that only 11.8% of their 32%, so a third of their game, was in their half. So any chance, if it's not turnover ball, they're getting out of there. So they don't play rugby in their half. So that's what I mean of Owen Farrell. His ability and his management of his game is so exceptional. And as a forward, I'd look back at him and just say, thanks, mate, because I'm rolling up my sleeves for you and you're rewarding me. You're constantly putting the ball in front of me. Yeah. You're constantly giving me green jerseys to run back at me when we're set and we're form and we can make these tackles.
And that's Farrell's kind of DNA, isn't it? If you think around his time when he was with England, you know, whenever they played the All Blacks and even Ireland as well, and even in the Lions, defensive pressure that you can put on teams, but then being able to have the game management, you know, with the likes of Farrell, who's world-class at it, to be able to put them in the right parts of the field and be disciplined enough not to give away penalties and just have a good, and just being able to tackle and dominate teams. It gets, you know, like Jip has said, you know, they make a lot of tackles, but they're doing it on their own. They want to do it. They want to do it so they can put that much amount of pressure over you. When they do get the turnover ball, they get a penalty. You've got Farrell kicking into the corner, or you get Farrell, they'll take the points away as well. But then again, I think this is where Northern Hemisphere rugby has got so much better. They have the ability to play as well.
Yeah.
So if you think about probably in the past, you know, they'd be really forward orientated. They'd kick their penalties. But now, where the game's going now, they're actually able to play. They've got, you know, face play shape. They can kick crossfield kicks, attacking kicks. So they've actually just got the best of both worlds. And when you've got a team that can defend well, kick well, but then you can play well, I just think the progression of Northern Hemisphere rugby, especially England, and I think that's why the All Blacks, when we play them, it's so much harder, because you've got to be able to, if we talk about triple threats around run, pass, kick, they've got the ability to do that, and they're brutal when it comes to defence and winning the breakdown battle with defence and an attack.
The catch and pass is a major one for me. Even 5 years ago, I felt like the catch and pass, the straighten and the inability to put a man into a hole from 12 through, you know, 11, 14 was average 20 years into professional rugby.
Yeah.
25 years in, it seems like they're doing it much better.
Wow, massive. Like Curry, Underhill and Vunipola are exceptional ball carriers, but also their interplay is great. We've spoken about Itoje, but one guy that goes unnoticed with a fantastic skill set, and I liken him to Charlie Farmuina, is Sinclair. He's got great feet, he's got great skill set, and he's tough, you know, so he'll take a tough carry, but he'll also suck in a defender when he looks him in the eyes, and he'll put a little ball away and put an underhill or a curry through a hole, or he'll go out the back, you know, so he's an unsung hero. George as well, like, they've just got a skill set of player now, And they're still a young team that are going to be together for a lot longer time. They're in a great place, England, and similar to RG is they love to defend. So, and where Ireland went wrong is I spoke about them having 68% of the possession, 56 of that they played out of their own half. So they were trying to combat them by playing, but it either led to a penalty or a turnover, and that just plays straight into England's hands. So I think they'll look at themselves and think that they got their game management a little bit wrong from a team that we're so used to doing so well from a game management point of view. Because when they got into the 22, Ireland looked effective, probably left a few tries out there, but they had a great attacking kicking game, and they've got a great mindset to attack now. You speak about the change of the Northern Hemisphere game. Ireland, were probably the ones that started all of it, and they have that great mindset. Now it's just finding the balance of not playing too much in your own
half. I think that's the problem with us, Chip, as well. Not the problem, but I think the reason why we have a bit of difficulty around is because we're such, in this part of the world, such attacking focused, especially in Super Rugby, but even like when we play the Wallabies and you look at Argentina and that kind of stuff previously, even South Africa, we wanted to play a lot. But I feel when you play the Northern Hemisphere teams, they're so good defensively and around slowing down the ball as well. They're really good at, I'm not going to say cheating, but they're good at really pushing the boundaries of the letter of the law. So they can make a tackle, they might just hold that ball in for half a second or a second to get their defensive line set, and then it's hard for us to tackle off that. And I think, you talk around our skill set, and we've probably for the last decade been the best in the world around, the likes of Brody, Sam, even our ball players with Charlie when he was here, and even our forwards being able to play the tip, out the back, and even on the edge, we have the ability to play. But now I feel like the Northern Hemisphere teams, they're exactly the same skill set, and they're big, big men. So I feel that, it's tough for us as well, because we're going up against guys that have great skill set, good kicking games, good defensive systems, but then they're also good ball carriers and crucial and really good in the breakdown as well. What do you recommend that, Jip?
Similar to what I said before, I just think they have a great balance of when to pull trigger, because they play so much wet weather footy and they've got so much of a base knowledge around that exit kick mindset to play the territory game. Now they're adding in the skill set to attack. I think they've got a great balance around that. But I think we do too, but it's just, like in Super Rugby, it's like for like. So if we're playing Super Rugby Aotearoa, both teams are trying to attack, so through that, gets fatigue, so defence doesn't change, so it works. So what we're talking about is defence suits in England, suits in Argentina, so what are you going to change in your attack to get that fatigue or get that confusion in defence to get the opportunities to score points? And I think most of the podcast has been around that, and hopefully we see that this weekend by the ABs.
So when they can match you on skill set, and then it's tactical, then it all becomes tactical, right? So in the past, the All Blacks have relied maybe on one or two moments of brilliance, taking those three moments in a game that come up and turning it into something that the other teams maybe couldn't do. Now the other teams can do it. We saw it with Johnny May. It was a heads-up play. They saw there was space. He put on the afterburners, and geez, he's fast. And, they can do it. So now that really puts the onus on the All Blacks to make sure that they're tactically aware.
Exactly, but I think, use this week in an example, is doing something that doesn't play into their hands. So I think Hoskins is going to be a key player. I don't know if he's starting or not, but if he does start, we saw the value of that quick hook and go. So maybe you're exiting. So Argentina are getting scrum penalties. They're running at 100% in their scrum. So, okay, take that weapon away from them. Quick hook and go. We've seen Hoskins. He can run the blind. So say they're exiting. He runs the blind. He gets a good 20, 25-metre carry, brings the winger up. So if that brings their fullback across, and then this winger, then there's kick space there. If they don't come across, then the box kicks straight on. So that's changing the picture on them defensively and making them do, rather than scrumming long and crashing up and then having the midfield, utilise something that we've got to manipulate their defence to give us options. And I think that'll be a key factor in this week is take that scrum away from them. That scrum penalty, as Ledesma said, changed the momentum for them mentally in that game to get out of that game with a draw, and then some other two poor penalties from the Wallabies, but he said it changed them mentally, that one scrum penalty. So, okay, you want to scrum? We're not going to scrum. We're going to quick hook and we're going to go every time. And then you're going to be worried. This is what the manipulation is. Your flankers will be worried. Okay, well, maybe I can't stay on the scrum. Is Hoskins coming? Oh, now you're scrumming.
Yeah.
Oh, you get a penalty. So straight away, it's that chess match.
Yeah,
and I think that part of the game is key to the All Blacks being able to get this result this weekend.
Yeah.
I feel like
and he's a Blues player.
Select him right now.
Hey, you're right though, mate. Yeah. You're right. I think And the thing about Hoskins, and he did it for you guys against the Blues.
I don't know how I've brought the England game back to the Blues and the All Blacks, but I've done it.
Yeah.
But being able to manipulate and be able to take pressure off your team is crucial. When you talk about Hoskins, his skills, he's actually got a run pass kick. And I know he only kicked once or twice for the Blues, but I've talked about this previous before. As a backfield cover and as a nine, if you can have a guy that can kick off the back of a scrum, for example, if you've got a 15 metre blind, and you've got the nine in the boot, it's me putting the ball in, and I fake to go left to take away the nine to hold the fullback, and Hoskins just gets a quick hook and goes down the blind side. It could be a 2-on-1, or he could just kick it down the channel.
Always going to make metres.
Yeah. And being able to take those, they're just such easy outs as well, Jip. It's a real low percentage play. There's no chance of a scrum penalty coming, and you can take the pressure off.
But
as
we
well.
Speak about test matches will be won on set piece. So if your set piece is not going well, it's a way out. Line out's a different story, a lot harder. You can go for your quick throws and manipulate it that way. Sorry to bring the England game away, but I just think we're playing a similar team this week, and if we can manipulate the defence and make them do things that they don't want to do, then we're going to put ourselves in a position which will create frustration for them. Maybe they focus too much on Niggle, and then we're the ones pulling the strings, not the other way.
I think it was always test matches, your front five and your eight have to bar it physically and around the breakdown, they're big men, and last time we played against them, they probably got us a little bit with tackling around getting a little bit higher, but then hunting on the ball as well. So, physicality in the breakdown and being able to get quick ball for Nuggie, Nuggie's game's all about temper and, firing the ball out, getting our boys to be able to play into shape, and especially with our shape, with Richie in behind, that needs to be done at speed. So I guess, again, you've got to be able to win the physicality battle, get low, beat them into that, win the race, and then be able to get good presentation for Nuggie so our ball can be quick and lightning and go from there.
Yeah, when he gets going,
they're
unstoppable, aren't they, when he's got that ball?
Well, it just puts the defence under pressure. If you slow down the ball and you've got a good line set, and it's much, as you know, Jip, it's easy to defend, but when you're getting good go-forward ball, like you saw the Australians in that first half when they were winning the breakdown battle, Nick White was getting out and sniping, they're giving the ball out to Hodge and they had attackers around him running short lines and out the back. It makes your game flow, and we've talked about it before, you've got to let, especially forwards and the guys on the edge, they've got to be able to make decisions under pressure. You've got to put them in a two minds whether they've got to hit that guy at the front, out the back, or anywhere around the ruck as well. So quick ball is going to be crucial for the boys on the weekend.
A couple of other big games this weekend, of course, Martin 10 Cup. The final, Tasman, in the final again. They're doing well to get into the final though, aren't they? I mean, obviously Auckland's been probably considered the front runner all year, but to go in, we've got a list here. Tim Perry, Wyatt Crockett, Liam Squire, Jordan Taufua, Shannon Frizzell. Who needs three All Black blindsides? That's ridiculous. Will Jordan, Ethan Blackadder, another good blindside, and Putty Parkinson. Like, those guys are big names, and they're doing it again without them.
The majority of them are forwards too.
Yeah.
And where they've probably struggled in games and lost is they've lost the scrum and line-out battle. So I think the reason they're in the final is through great leadership from your mate Dave Havili, but they're game drivers. Christie, Hunt and Havili have been, I'd say, their balance of attack under pressure. Yes, when they haven't had that front foot ball, but they've scored the most tries off turnovers, so they're playing to their strengths. Mm.
Yep.
So the biggest thing is they're playing to their strength. They've scored second most tries in the comp off line-out, but a lot of those line-outs aren't line-out drives. They're in and out mindset. Yeah. So they know that it's not a strength. They've lost a lot of experience, a lot of height in their line-out, so they're in and out, and they're creating a lot of the Crusader-based sort of special plays off their line-out. So that's what I want to give the credit to, and that's how they've fought. One, their character and their leadership group have fought hard, but they're smart. They've played to their strength the whole season, and on the back of what we've just been speaking about, England and Argentina, they've let in the least amount of tries.
Yep.
Yeah.
27, equal with Auckland though. So it sets up for a perfect final, and it goes back to the point, defence wins championships. So they've got a great character, they roll their sleeves up on defence, but they've also got that really good game drivers in there to get that balance of attack.
Like if you look at that that Bay Plenty game, they didn't play a lot of the box kicks from Finlay Christie, were unbelievable, but you look about how many they got back, the likes of Mark Talia, Leicester, getting those balls back. And I know Andrew Goodman has a massive influence around that. His mindset really is, It's your job. Doesn't matter if there's escorts in front of you. Your job is to be courageous and get up for the ball and win the ball for the team. You know, so when you've got the messaging around like that, like Mark, I look at Mark last year at North Harbour. There was no way he was as good in the air as he is now. He's obviously the Blues did a lot of work with Ringy and the backs units there, but you know, Andrew Goodman will probably add another level around that kind of detail and understanding of like how important it is in big games like that, where you're not getting a lot of, there wasn't a lot of points scored, but those crucial moments where you can just get a turnover, you know, it's a knock on and it's a scrum or it's a penalty and you're just releasing pressure and you're building pressure in another way. So, you know, I thought Finn was awesome on the weekend around how many contestables they got back. And then you talk around David Harvilli's game management and Mitch Hunt. You know, these boys have been together for a long time now. You know, 50-plus games with Finn, Tim Mitchie and Davey. You know, that experience you have in your spine is crucial, especially in big games
like
that.
It's one thing to have that experience. It's one thing to have all the plans. But I think those three men have really taken charge of the team and that and the balance of attack. And then the forwards, although they haven't had the best year, at scrum and line out, have rolled their sleeves up on defence. They've made a heck of a lot of tackles and they've stayed in the fight and sort of, I suppose, ground out victories off the back of set piece that they're not used to.
Yep.
And that shows in the fact that the least tries scored against them. But I think it just is it shows if you can keep a group together in Mitre 10 Cup, and yes, they've lost some players, but there's still a good core group that stayed together with good coaching. It gives them the ability, but a lot of credit has to go to, what's under there is their character and their willingness to fight for victory.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great. You know, you talk about Auckland, you know, have been probably the front runners of the year, the form team of the year. Yes, they're Tasman of, you know, defending champions, but, you know, the way, what I've been really impressed about them, I was talking to Scott and Jack and that kind of stuff, they actually don't feel like they've been playing that good of rugby. If you look on their result on the weekend, individual brilliance from certain players have probably won them a lot of games. But in finals, it's going to be interesting to see their defence, which were just strong.
Yeah, they've led in 27 tries. So, like, I have to commend Auckland's character as well, quite frankly. Like, they have had injuries. They've had All Blacks go. Like, they're down to their 7th or 8th Lucy. Something they won a game with 14 and no hookers.
Yeah.
Like, their character and their fight and their willingness for what they want to do for their jersey is just the same. So for me, it's a perfect set final. It's two teams that will leave nothing out there and leave nothing to chance in the preparation. And I don't think Auckland have won all these games off individual brilliance. I think it's off the back of their defence and their willingness to fight for each other. And yeah, there's some great tries, but if you look at what leads up to those tries, it's all from turnover ball. Adrian Choate getting turnovers, you know, Jonathan Roo's in there getting turnovers. It's through that fight and willingness to know that if we get the ball back, we're a chance. And then from there on, they've let the likes of Rayasi, Tamua Manu and AJ Lamb be a threat. You know, Jordan Traynor was exceptional when he was playing there as well. And Harry Plummer's been pulling the strings and letting them up, but it's on the back of a lot of fight and heart and will for the jersey. And I don't want to take away from that from Auckland. You know, we're speaking about Tasman and the players they've lost. The amount of players that Auckland's lost this season is incredible to see that they've been able to still chip up wins. And, you know, a home final, they'd probably have to go on as favourites, which is dangerous against the Tasman side, but it's pretty exciting Saturday, isn't it? You know, they've brought the kickoff forward, and I think it's key to mention that because it's at 6:30, not 7:05, so that, you know, get to the game.
It's free.
Get to the game, and then you can get home and watch the All Black Test. But they've brought the kickoff forward so that you can get there and get amongst it and get behind your team.
I think around that, I think, and I was talking to the boys last year, how much it meant and being able to, I think it was a couple of years ago when they had that final, you know, it was free.
It was free.
How much it actually helped them.
It was wet weather, so hopefully it's sunny and everyone comes out.
But you can't only risk a home crowd, especially at Eden Park. You can sell, you know, get a lot of people out in those big moments. I was talking to the guys when they had that final, how much it actually uplifted them in big moments to hear their crowd. So, you know, hopefully the Auckland public can get out. You know, there'll be a few Tasman people that'll fly up as well, but, you know.
Are you supporting Tasman?
What's that?
Are you going there as a Tasman
fan? My flatmates and I have teammates in Tasman. So I'm sitting on the fence. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. But, yeah, I think as Auckland fans, I think it's a great opportunity to get out and support your guys that have done, showed a lot of character, a lot of resilience. They've had a lot go, a lot of things go against them. But again, they finished first and they're deserving of a home final.
I have to ask, how many times has Jack referred to his turnover?
Oh, mate.
And then the pump up of the crowd.
I'll tell you what.
I mean, I've seen someone The one that lie on the ground like he was buggered. He'd come on for like 20 minutes, and all I was thinking in my lounge was he is going to be talking about that
for days.
You know, the funny thing,
him and Scott Scrafton have a bit of banter. Like, they've got some good banter, those two. So before that turnover, you know, because obviously we're on our WhatsApp and our Facebook page, said, "Oh, Jack, mate, well done, mate, great steal, big moment, big play." That's what he was saying, and then Scott Scrafton just goes, "Oh, mate, you're the person that led him through to start with."
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Better have got that front. So.
I've never seen this. He's just at the crowd, get himself up. Oh, mate, it was enjoyable. He's a true character.
He is.
Yeah. He loves it, and you know, he should. He's had a good year.
He's had a great year through. I think. Dixon going down with his injury, who was on track. He was one of the form locks, and there was spots open for the ABs. But he really took it, that Highlanders pack, by the scruff of the neck, you know, alongside Ash Dixon and Dylan Hunt and that. But he's a big factor in them winning good ball and putting them in position. So he has had a great year.
He hasn't.
That's enough. I don't need to pump him up anymore.
Yeah, because he'll enjoy it. He's been up for 3 or 4 weeks as well. Obviously had that injury, and I know back at home he's just been chipping away trying to get on the field. And he was actually hoping for a start. He was adamant. He's like, mate, I want to be starting this weekend. But I know Hamish Dalziel's been going well as well. But any time you can get a player like that with that experience, who's been playing pretty well for the Highlanders, but even experience in Super Rugby. Having him on board is going to be crucial for Auckland.
Speaking of experience, it's been a while since we've pumped up your teammate, Ash Dixon.
Oh.
No? Yes? No?
Oh.
Hey?
Are you talking about four? Oh, nice.
I almost got there. I left that through to the keeper, almost.
He's paid $1.40 to score a try on the weekend.
Ash Dixon, obviously, probably, I would have thought one of the favourites to be the captain of the Māori team, but as the captain of Hawke's Bay, has been sensational.
He has, and I'll jump in here because obviously I'm the same position as him. look, I love my stats. So he's averaging 67 minutes out of 10 games. So he's rolling up the sleeves. It's a lot of minutes in MITRE after a pretty big performance and a lot of minutes for the Highlanders. So he's not afraid of the work. He's passionate about the two teams he plays with. He's had 72 carries, 237 metres. So over 10 games, that's averaging 7 carries a game, which is reasonable work for a hooker. 3 metres 30 per carry. He's had 9 clean breaks. This is the one that sort of impresses me. 84 tackles at 91% over 670 minutes is pretty impressive. But the best part about his game is his core roles, and he's thrown at 92.2%, and everyone will be like, 92.2, that's off 128 lineouts. So that's a lot, he's on the field a lot, that's a lot of lineouts, and he's only missed 10. And some of those misses that I've had a look at are not due to just throw, it's lifting timing, guys forgetting. So he's the sort of thrower that can throw at 99%. If you give him a basketball target, he'll hit it 99 times out of 100. And I think that's his biggest strength, is he's providing them a platform to play off the back of. And I'm going to get a pump up for Tom Parsons as well.
Ash
Dixon and Tom have been leading that forward pack. Tom's played an average of 72 minutes. He's had 62 carries. He's had 69 tackles at 92%. He's had 8 turnovers, 1 at the breakdown. For a big body, he's getting over it. He's had 54 lineouts, which is the second most in the whole competition. And their set-piece success is on back of these two men allowing the platform for the boys to attack. And I know that sounds biased, but it's not. He deserves deserves a super contract as Tom Parsons.
Did you draw him in Secret Santa?
12% dominant as well. 12% dominant tackles. I forgot that little one there. He deserves it. He's the most humble guy you'll ever meet. And both of them, Ash as well, but... I think if you ask Ash Dixon who's helped him out the most, is Tom Parsons being there most of the way, rolling his sleeves up. And I know he's hungry for some Super Rugby, so he deserves to have a lick somewhere.
Parsons to Parsons?
I'd love to, mate. He's a great option. As I said, he's got some line-out steals as well, and the big fella's doing the work over the breakdown. So, those two boys have been great.
Let's select them now.
Now.
Right now. So who wins? Who wins this weekend? What do we got for Championship and Premiership? Hubert?
Losing Nockie.
Yeah, Nockie's massive for Northland. He is so influential in their team. So I think, unfortunately, with him being injured, I think Hawke's Bay are probably going to be a bit too good for Northland. But then I think
Battle of the Mullets would have been great, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have been.
Fakatava versus Noch.
What you call that thing at the back there?
Sort of thing. Yeah. The Battle of the Hair Dye, then.
Yeah.
Because they're both blonde sort of mulets.
It's an animal.
Mulet. Are you going out of Tasman and Auckland, Jip?
Tasman who?
Tasman and Auckland.
Auckland for me. I think they've got some great attacking power. And as we've seen earlier in the year at Eden Park, I think they'll go through the forwards.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.